Well, we've been having fun on Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. We finished our first category, and now it's time for our newest category, which is Best Adult-Oriented Sports Comedies. Tonight we have a good one, Caddyshack versus Happy Gilmore. Two golf movies. We did not intend for it to be that way, but that is the way it turned out. So we get the two golf movies in our bracket in the first round in our first battle. I am Greg, and with me each and every week is my good friend Eric to discuss these movies. I wasn't finished. To discuss these movies. And I think I'm just going to keep him stringing on for just a little bit longer. No, we'll let him go ahead and say hi while he's taking a drink of coffee.
You run the risk the longer that you take to introduce me. And thank you for the introduction of my microphone just going out randomly. So we avoided that this time.
We have so far. It's early yet.
I'd almost rather it just happen right at the top so that you can get into introducing the format of the show and I can furiously try to figure out why something that was working while you and I were in pre-show no longer works once the show starts. But tonight, we don't have that issue. Hello, Greg.
Hey, Eric. Well, yeah, I mean, normally that's been a thing. That's kind of been our bit where you start and then you freeze or something like that. So far, so good. But this is our sixth episode. So we've gotten our feet wet on this whole deal with doing the box office battles. We had AFI's top eight movies that's in the can now. We've gotten through one. And now I think that we're going to have a lot of fun. Not that the first one battles weren't great. They were awesome for what they were. But now we're in kind of a fun mode where we're going to go through these sports comedies. And I think the films will definitely be shorter.
It was a very pleasant surprise to see 92-minute movies instead of 3 hours and 42 minutes.
Yep, that's for sure. Now, and of course, a lot of these I've already seen, but it's nice to watch them again to decide, you know, kind of is it one really better than the other? And so just real quick, we're going to look at the bracket as it is. This is the top eight sports comedies that we have for you coming up on Box Office Battles. We have the number one seed Slapshot is going to go up against number eight Dodgeball. The number four seed tonight, Caddyshack, taking on number five Happy Gilmore. Major League, the number two, going on against Kingpin, the number seven. I'm looking forward to that one. And a classic, The Longest Yard at number three, going along with White Men Can't Jump coming up. But tonight we have two golf films. I play golf a lot. Do you play golf at all, Eric? I've been playing a lot more this year than I have forever.
Yeah, you're like Mr. Break 90 these mm-hmm. days, aren't you? Or Break 80? What'd you break? You did something that a lot of golfers don't do.
I broke 90. I've shot 85 twice this year, and then I shot 88. So yeah, I've never done that before. I've only ever broke 90 once before, and it was years ago when I was playing every day. It just goes to show you, if you play something every day and you practice at it, chances are you might improve.
I wish people would just have figured that out a long time ago, that practice makes perfect. No, Greg, I don't golf. There's a couple of reasons why. I'm poor. And also, I rarely, with a bunch of kids running around here, have 4 or 5 hours to go dedicate to something that, frankly, I am not very good at. And practice can make perfect. That is true. But I don't have the coordination to be good at golf. There are too many moving parts all at one time. And I'm a tall, uncoordinated, lanky person. If you've ever seen Jim Furyk's swing.
Yeah, I have.
It's like that times a billion. Like Charles Barkley's old swing. Now, the last time I played with my dad and uncle, I shot a 97.
Oh, that's not bad.
But the second nine, I shot 85. So it ends up being about a 170, and that's a lot of golf.
That'll wreck your shoulder. The thing is,
that's
you're right.
That's a good joke, though, right? That first nine, second nine.
I did not catch that one. You got Yeah, that was good.
Hey, what are you drinking there?
Okay, so tonight is basically I'll do a quick commercial.
Yeah,
why don't you? This is a very inexpensive bourbon called Green River Wheated Bourbon. So I'm not drinking anything fancy schmancy. It's about $25 to $30 at your local liquor store. But I do have my nice fancy bourbon glass, because a lot of times if you're drinking it properly, you're supposed to have a little bit of water pitcher with it. You put a little bit of water in your bourbon, just a little, just to so you can bring out the flavor, and then enjoy it. And then it's narrow, so you can smell it and get all the notes and everything like that.
Is this why people order scotch and water? I thought it was just like, you know, they say for every drink, have some water so you don't get drunk. And I thought that's why people are doing it. You're telling me it has something to do with the whole experience, the taste, the...
Yeah. I mean, when you order scotch and water, then it you've already, you know, you're watering it down just a little bit to open up the notes. You can drink it neat. I drink bourbon neat sometimes and no problem with it. It depends on the proof, that kind of thing, and how strong it is. The stronger ones are harder or harsher, so it's nice to have that. I personally prefer it this way just because I do like being able to taste it really well without being completely just full of alcohol. So,
gotcha.
But it is good. That's what I'm drinking. So that is the commercial for Green River. Hopefully they'll be our sponsor one day and I'll get free cases of Green River down the road. That's wishful thinking, so we'll see. But yeah, no.
Green River, if you're out there listening.
I don't even think anybody knows who they are. I found it on like the bottom shelf, tried it and went, oh, that's pretty tasty. And that's what you got to do these days. Find something you like. But, you know, I play golf. I'm actually going Friday and Monday this week. And you're right. It is an expensive hobby. I am not going to deny that. It's more that in my later years, when I was younger and was in the Air Force, I didn't have the time or the capacity to get good at it or the money. I had young kids as well. So I totally relate to all that. My kids all being out of the house, I was kind of floundering looking for something. I play guitar and that's nice, but I can't always play guitar every night or as when I want to, because there's other people to think of. So then I just started going out with friends this year, and now it's become kind of an every weekend thing. It's really good for us as older gentlemen. I have a friend of mine that before we started playing, he had limited mobility, didn't get out much. And now I watch him play and I can see him moving around better. He's got a better attitude. It's a good sport. So if you're a golfer, these movies kind of affect you a little bit differently than if you're not, even though they're still entertaining to people who just know golf and just watch golf on TV or anything like that. But if you are a golfer, you play golf, or even if you've only picked up a club every once in a while, it's a lot more fun to watch these kind of golf comedies. So when I was watching these, I was picking up on things, the golf terminology, the different things that they were trying to do, what they did right, what they did wrong. But we're going to start with Happy Gilmore, which was Adam Sandler put out in 96, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. I was a young man at the time and living in Alabama. And when I first watched this movie, it was right for my age at that time. It was Adam Sandler was on Saturday Night Live along with David Spade, Chris Farley, and this era, and Mike Myers, and this era kind of brought out those characters or those cast members into the limelight by getting them their own solo projects. You know, Mike Myers did the Austin Powers, Chris Farley did, you know, Black Sheep and Tommy Boy. You know, they went on to do these kind of sophomore comedies. And Adam Sandler, not to be denied, you know, did his own with Happy Gilmore. We started with Billy Madison, which he did some other movies, but Billy Madison was his first real big one. And then this one was kind of the follow-up to that. And it was a huge hit.
96, I was graduating from high school and coming off of, like you said, Billy Madison, and coming off of the album, the comedy album that he put out, They're All Gonna Laugh at You.
Oh, good album.
Yeah. And those were formative comedy for anyone of that age at that time. It was the way that you interacted with your friends. It was a sort of in joke, except everybody was in on it because everybody I knew loved that album and loved those first two movies. Of course, Adam Sandler's gone on to just making the same movie every 3 years with the same people, gets paid. You know, I think I saw he signed a $250 million contract with Netflix to put out a couple more movies. And what a charmed life for the guy who showed up doing
the Hanukkah show.
You know, yeah. He seemed like a one-trick pony, and here we are all these years later, and
he's still doing the trick.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Jimmy Buffett, who, by all accounts, an okay musician. He surrounded himself with great musicians. Yeah. But that guy turned kind of mediocre, beachy pop rock into a lifestyle, into something that people of a certain age, that was kind of your goal in life, was to get old enough to retire, to wear flip-flops and cargo shorts and live in Key West and own a boat and, you know, have a cheeseburger in paradise. And it was just a singularly focused thing that admittedly he did really well. And I like some Jimmy Buffett songs. Nobody write into the show tell me I don't like Jimmy Buffett. And Sandler seems to have captured lightning in a bottle to do one thing particularly well. And I do believe that Happy Gilmore is a very good example, if you wanted to pull one from his long list of films, of one where he captures the magic very, very well. So let's get into this guy.
Yeah, well,
let's get into this thing.
The Jimmy Buffett comparison is kind of funny because, Jimmy Buffett is kind of comfort food music. It is a niche that people relate to, and he could do the same type of island-related song. And it's the same thing with Adam Sandler. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. If you have people that like this sense of humor, then continue to do it. Now, that being that aside, he has done a couple of decent dramas like Punch Drunk Love and then Uncut Gems, not one of my favorite movies, but I give it a lot of credit because it's grueling as far as a gripping drama. So he does have acting chops. It's just when he chooses to use them or not.
Yeah. And I tried to look up that Uncut Gems, but ended up watching Uncut Genitals. Same, you know.
Yeah, a lot of circumcision in that movie.
Yeah, very anxiety inducing, which I understand Uncut Gems also.
Or lack of circumcision, Uncut Gems.
Going for it. It's always the threat of the circumcision that really keeps you on edge. You never know when it's going to happen.
No.
And that was the scary part.
So, and Jimmy Buffett had, you know, Come Monday, which to me is like one of the most fantastic songs he ever did, if not the best song he ever did. So, they have, you know, it's not just that one trick. They can branch out, but then it's like, why do it? And if it works, and this is what people want. And I kind of appreciate that in a way. And this movie, watching it again, it's been a while since I've watched it. Just a few years. I pop it in every now and again. I'll be honest, if I'm having a few drinks and I just want to, you know, a sophomoric laughs, I'll throw this or something like it on. Tommy Dude, Boy.
This is great. It is something you're interested in.
Yeah.
But I don't think you have to be interested in golf to find this movie funny.
Yeah.
It has a lot of heart because it's built around a schlub of a guy with failed dreams trying to save his grandmother's house.
Yes.
And his girlfriend has broke up with him. So we establish early on this very down in the dumps, every man up against the odds, with a fantastic villain. Shooter McGavin is a top 10 movie villain in my book of all time. Just how dastardly and cocky and sure of himself. And I don't know that there are many movies I've watched where I root harder against a character than you find yourself rooting against Shooter McGavin. It's so well done. And he doesn't have a bunch of lines.
No.
But he's just such a son of a bitch, Greg.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's kind of like when we talked about Lena Lamont in Singing in the Rain, where he's not intending to be a bad guy. He is just out to win the championship. This guy is coming on that kind of flips everything about the sport he loves on its head, including the way you drive the ball. The attention that he had is now moved, even though Happy's not winning. Yeah. So it is, he is reactionary, and then he just keeps getting more and more unhinged. And it's just masterfully played. And the actor, Christopher McDonald, he had done so many villain roles, and he didn't want to take this role. But he read the script, and he was like, yeah, it's something I got to do.
I'm glad he did. Yeah. And we kind of get a very similar parallel to the movie we'll talk about next, Caddyshack, in this establishment versus, you know, upstart kind of on the fringes of society. And that was a big formula for 80s movies specifically. I think it just resonated at that time and place. You see it in, what was the 80s ski movie? Shit.
Oh, there's tons.
Can't Buy Me Love.
No, was that, better. Are you talking Better Off Dead?
Better Off Dead. Yeah. So there's always the rich, preppy ups, you know, versus the grimy, grungy
Revenge
upstarts.
Of the Nerds, the Outcasts. They still do that trope today. I think today it's not as subtle as it was back then. You could just have these two groups and not continually remind the other group that they're marginalized, or say the buzzwords. When you say the buzzwords that are politically correct, it kind of defeats the purpose of trying to subliminally teach people a lesson. So, and these movies, again, there's never a time where Shooter McGavin talks about how much more rich he is than Happy. He just plays pranks on him, has him go to the freaking ninth green and the shower, you know, and the sprinklers come on. And so he just carries himself with airs, carries himself like he's better than Happy without having to actually say it. You get that. And I think today's movies kind of, when it's in your face like that, it's not as entertaining as when you can see it for yourself, that who the underdogs are and who they're not. And Happy, again, like we talked about, he wants to play hockey. That's all he ever wants to do. He's a failed hockey player. And then his grandmother's house gets repossessed for unpaid taxes, which I thought was hilarious. She just doesn't pay them. She just doesn't pay them. Oh, I didn't know we really had to. And so then he has to shift gears to find something to make money, and it turns out he's just really good at hitting a golf ball. But, you know, the opening scene, what we were talking about with the girlfriend leaving, this is one of the best moments.
Oh, baby, I didn't mean that.
Exactly. Pure Adam Sandler. Then he's like,
The licking the intercom.
Oh, yeah. I want to kiss you all over.
Over it again. And
what's great is that the little Asian woman that shows up at the door the next morning.
You want breakfast?
Exactly. When he runs out the door. And she's like, you don't want breakfast? Yeah, she's still not. That's, you know, one of those surprise things. But yeah. It's great. He ends up like figuring out that he can hit a golf ball. Again, another great scene where he drives it down the middle of the street and he hits his neighbor in the head.
And then it knocks the old knocks the lady out of the door,
out of the window.
I mean, I'm sorry. I know that this shit is dumb, but like it was like I was 18, 19 watching this again.
Yeah.
I was crying,
yeah,
laughing at some of these things. And obviously I'm not above, even as you grow older and your tastes in comedy change, or your tastes in all things change,
right?
But where you as a youngster appreciate the Three Stooges and fart jokes and pies in the face, and as an adult I can watch those and have a tough time with some of those old, it's too much, right? And maybe you learn to appreciate subtlety, satire, wit, which requires some intelligence, which requires some thoughtfulness to them. But like, this movie isn't that. It's people getting hit with golf balls. Yeah. It's a fight between Bob Barker and Happy Gilmore. I want to kiss you all over and be engrossed into a thing. It's none of it's meant to be highbrow.
No, it's definitely,
it's so honest. Good. It's executed so well.
Yeah. It's definitely honest with what it is. And it has pure Sandler humor. there are jokes in it that don't always land. It's like the part where he's talking about taking his house, and he's like, you can't take her house. She's old. Look at her. She's old. Now, that's not a great written joke, but when delivered by Sandler and you watch it in that context, again, you bring up a great point. Three Stooges, they did a wonderful short back in the day about playing golf, and this is a very similar thing where they're on the golf course and everything's going wrong and they're driving the people crazy. So this kind of shtick goes way back. It worked then and it works now. And it works because they had Adam Sandler doing what he does best, coming up with this guy who never plays golf and all of a sudden he's amazingly good at it. But it also works because they have a great surrounding cast around him. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorites is Carl Weathers as Chubbs, who sees him at the driving range and decides that this guy can have a career in golf. And man, he steals his moments when he's in there, especially because of his wooden hand, because he got it bitten off by the alligator that took his golf ball.
And it is such a great running gag that they incorporate into several scenes where it gets broken, it gets repaired. I don't want to spoil too much, but he does meet an untimely passing, and Sandler picks his wooden hand up and shakes it, and it's such a great payoff. Yeah. It starts funny because it's a very obviously fake, trying to look realistic.
Yeah, that's the bit.
Like 125% sized wooden hand, just large enough to be funny, and man, so.
Yeah, no, it
gets run over by a truck. It is glued back together. It gets broken. He's great. It reminds me of a small character he played in Arrested Development, where he's a struggling actor, just has a few scenes, but steals them. He's always talking about making a stew, about taking, if you're an extra on a movie, you can take food from craft services and take it home and start a stew. It's this running gag. Yeah, rest in peace, Carl.
Watching the scene at the end where he's playing We've Only Just Begun to Live, I've seen that after he passed away, they showed that video on Facebook, and it was kind of bittersweet because it's, look, I got my hand back, you know, and then he just, but rest in peace to Chubbs and the alligator that fought Happy.
Poor alligator. And then by the way, we mentioned Kiss You All Over and We've Only Just Begun.
Yes.
The soundtrack on this thing is crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's like,
it starts off with
Skinner.
Tuesday's Gone with the Wind. It opens up. So they had to put some budget into the soundtrack. That's for sure. So,
yeah. Magic.
Yeah.
Carry On, Wayward Son.
Endless Kansas, Love.
Endless Love, which is that also is such a funny, great scene. Jump Around, House of Pain.
Yep, yeah, amazing soundtrack.
Yeah, it's so cool.
I was talking about the cast that's in there, and there's even, you know, the minor cast that is in that stand out in their certain moments. And I probably, my favorite minor character in the film is Ben Stiller's Hal.
An uncredited Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
Who apparently just wanted to be a part of it, or doing his buddy a favor, because this isn't a one scene dialogue cameo.
He's multiple times, but he's got such a great role that had to have been so much fun to play the orderly or running a sweatshop in the nursing home. So real quick, before we go any further, let's just check out real quick the scene of Hal in the nursing home. This is probably one of my, favorite parts of the movie.
I want you to do me a favor. You see that lady? She's very important to me, okay?
Okay.
So I want you to take extra special care of her. You know what I'm talking about here?
I can't accept that. But I'll tell you what I can do. I can take extra special care of that young lady over there for nothing.
Okay, I appreciate that. Have a nice afternoon.
Sir, could I trouble you for a glass of warm milk? It helps put me to sleep.
You could trouble me for a warm glass of shut the hell up. Now you will go to sleep, or I will put you to sleep. Check out the name tag. You're in my world now, Grandma.
Oh, dear.
It's so good. I will put you to sleep.
Who hasn't said to their friend, you can have a glass of shut the hell up? Yeah, the warm glass of shut the hell up. Yep. We say price is wrong, oh, bitch.
Yeah, got some. Yeah.
You don't like your home? Get your home. Say that. I do wonder, Greg, as a brief aside, if movies like this, movies like the one that we will talk about here in a little bit,
yeah,
led to the proliferation of fucking golf bro douchebags acting like maniacs at PGA golf tournaments, where "get in the hole" is shouted every time someone drives a par five.
Mashed potatoes. Yep. And they've got more. Now they're doing Hawk-tua on the
Hawk-tua. Spit on that thing. You know?
Yeah, no. You know, I actually go to some golf events, and there are people who are there to enjoy it, you know, and it is a good event. I mean, people can slag on golf all they want. I have a blast going to a golf tournament, just picking a you know, whatever hole you're going to be at, standing in the fairway, watching all the stars come through, drinking beer. I never get loud and rowdy, but there are people that do, and they act like they're teenagers, and there's nothing you can really do about it. They do. I will say this, though. They're very, at the PGA, not so much the LIV Golf Tour, which is like freaking unhinged, which is the other tour, the Saudi Arabian tour. But the PGA, they do admonish people when they do get too loud. So that's there. And I don't mind it so much, to be honest. I just don't want it to get crazy. It's not a football game to where we can yell and scream at everything that happens. But there is great moments. I was at the PGA Championship this year after Scottie Scheffler got arrested and manhandled by the Louisville PD. And I was there on day two when he shot an eagle on the very first hole, and I was standing near the green. You want to talk about loud? That ball, it one hop and went in the hole, and everybody just lost their shit. And so,
well, luckily, that was the first and only time that the Louisville Police Department has had any problematic experiences.
True. But I don't want to go down that road too much, but you make a good point.
I don't want to seem all stuffy because I'm anything but.
Yeah.
And I like seeing the footage of, what is it, the Waste Management Open that create that party amphitheater, you know. And I like, that's really entertaining. And if you want to make golf as a sport more accessible to both different income types and, you know, more accessible to just more different types of people, then having events like that where, you know, people can go and party and it's an accepted part of what it is. Those people generally also are sitting around the green and not around the tee box. I find it so pick me. I'm some funny fucking guy. And like, you're not funny. You're not creative. You're just being a stupid fucking douche chode for no reason.
There's a difference to me than making a giant beer snake out of cups at the Waste Management Open, which if you're going to that tournament, you should know what you're in for. You know, they had people though that did come over the railing and jump into the sand trap and was doing fake swimming in the sand. But that tournament is a unique one on the PGA Tour. But yeah, it is when people do make it about themselves. I don't like anything when people make it about themselves.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy when people have a good time. And so, like I said, I'm not going to lie. I went to the PGA Championship, and, you know, the days that I went, I drank a little more than I usually do, but I was very, you know, well-behaved, and I just had a blast. You know, just you'd walk around, you drink, you watch golf. It's no big deal. But getting back to the movie, we're talking about the minor characters. One of the things that's really great about Happy is he's got two different caddies in the film. He has the one that starts off, which the kid looks like Will Zalatoris, if you know who that is from the PGA. But one of my favorite scenes is when he tells him he's there to make sure that he doesn't embarrass himself. But then he's standing. Where were you on that one?
Dipshit.
Dipshit. But, you know, so that guy is great. But then he ends up having to choose his own caddy when he gets on tour. And then we're introduced to, he doesn't have a name in the film, although they say that his name is Otto in a deleted scene. But good Lord, this guy, for saying nothing except for a few words toward the end, every moment that he's in is just, yeah, the dirty socks covering the golf clubs, the bathing in the pond. My favorite, the one on the bottom right here, where he picks up the quarter when the guy puts it down.
You can't just be leaving quarters around this guy and think, you know, you're going to make it home with him.
Otto's classic.
Use something else. Yeah, I liked Otto. It reminds me of Fluff, the caddy back from Tiger Woods early days.
I read when I was looking into this, you know, just because we do stuff researching for this, for the podcast, that it was supposed to be Chris Farley that was going to play this role, but he had contractually obligated himself to do Black Sheep. So they had to go to, one other of Sandler's buddies to play.
Yeah. This guy writes a bunch of stuff with Sandler, and the whole movie is probably filled with.
Yeah, without a doubt.
You know, the guy who is the tax agent is Robert Schmeichel.
Oh, yes.
From Saturday Night Live. He did all the TV Funhouse stuff.
I was going to mention that. Yeah, he's good. Yeah, it's Alan Covert is his name. And he's really funny. You don't see him in a lot of other things, but he's good in this for barely saying anything. So I think I'd rather see him than Chris Farley do this role, because Chris Farley probably would have been a little bit more over the top. So I think that this one's done really well. I also like when he has the cracker that he puts down to mark the ball, then he picks it up and starts eating it. It's just a bite. There's a lot of great visual moments in that. So yeah, the cast is amazing. And as the movie goes on, there's just great little cameo moments. We know this one with Lee Trevino when he starts cursing on the T-box and then he keeps popping up throughout the thing.
Just shaking his head.
Oh yeah, turning. And then he was like, if Grizzly Adams had a beard, then he goes, well, Grizzly Adams did have a beard. That's all, I think, the only thing he says. But, they've got another cameo, Jaws, Richard Kiel.
Yeah.
For the few moments he's in it, he's just absolutely outstanding. Gets the nail gun in the head. He's got it here in this picture, sticking out of his head.
And you can count on me waiting for you. That is probably the most memorable quote from this movie. I think if you took a poll, I think people remember that one. Maybe Price is Wrong.
Oh, that's definitely it. And that's the other cameo. You got Bob Barker as well.
Yep.
You know, the thing is, they were actually looking at other people to do it. They were looking at Ed McMahon. Ed McMahon didn't want to do it because of the language in the film, which they ended up paring down anyway to get a PG-13 rating. So Bob Barker really didn't care. In fact, he had actually trained with Chuck Norris and was excited.
That is so funny.
And he did his own stunts, for crying out loud. Unbelievable.
That's so great. Yeah, and, he was one of... Cripley has mentioned in the chat that he was a golf addict. You know, we know that from watching Price is Right, and they had the putting game, and he'd always, take a putt first to show him how to play. That was his whole shtick. So, and it was just unexpected, because Bob Barker is kind of one of those, like, America's comfort, your uncle. He was on TV for so long here in the States that he always was so, calm and level-headed, and he hosted this game show, and that's really all you knew of him. And so it was, at the time, such a shock to see someone like that doing something like that.
Yeah.
I don't think it can be understated how unexpected that scene was the first time you see it, given who he was at the time and just the whole...
Before the fight, if you're watching it for the first time, you're watching this movie, the part where he just throws his hands up and goes, "This guy sucks."
Yeah.
It takes you completely by surprise if you're watching it for the first time. I remember it was like, I started laughing out loud. Oh, that's brilliant. And then when they start fighting, it's just the icing on the cake. And apparently it was just supposed to be one punch. Adler was supposed to knock him out, and then they decided to make it a full fight, which is so much better that he gets his ass beat by Bob Barker. And then the end when he turns around, and he goes, "I think you've had enough." Now you've had enough. Kicks in the face, turns around, "Bitch." It's great. It's good. Another cast member early in her career was Julie Bowen from, we know from Modern Family, most likely, or if you know Boston Legal. It's unbelievable to watch this now, because she doesn't even look like the same person. She's so fresh-faced.
I missed it. I didn't know that's who this was. I looked at the cast later and immediately went,
"Yeah,
are you kidding me?" And I just, it just slipped. But yeah, she's great as the little PR lady and becomes the love interest.
Again, and we talked about the soundtrack, the love interest thing where they have the scene in the ice rink is that takes you out of the film for a moment where the Zamboni driver is lip-syncing both parts to Endless Love as they're on the ice. It's a funny way to do a romantic scene, and it works really well because you've got this sweet scene and then you've got this guy lip-syncing with the background. There are so many things to like about it. You know, I read that Sandler wrote the initial draft in it. You can tell because it has a lot of his jokes, but then I also heard that Judd Apatow rewrote the script and fleshed out a lot more of the jokes, and you can see that too. Yes, yeah, so it has this really blend of this smart humor or this abstract humor going along with the slapstick humor, which is really good. It's just an outstanding film. Again, I didn't even mention Joe Flaherty from SCTV, who plays the guy that keeps yelling at him from the sidelines.
Yeah, he passed away recently. He did.
I grew up on SCTV with John Candy and Rick Moranis and Joe Flaherty, Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara, and he was one of my favorites on that. And he steals his moments. Everybody gets these little moments in the film, and the whole who doesn't go jackass,
jackass. I mean, it was this whole thing. Now I will say, I saw that he passed away, and you saw in that picture that we just brought up, he's just a regular looking guy, but he was like 84 years old.
It
doesn't seem to me like it's been that long since this movie came out. I recognize that I've been out of high school for 30 years now. And sometimes it definitely feels that way and sometimes it doesn't, but these movies, I think for anybody, regardless of when you graduated from high school, but when you watch movies that came out at that time, they hit you a different way. This is, I believe, one of the disconnects that I personally had with Beetlejuice, and I don't mean to belabor the Beetlejuice point, but that Happy Gilmore, and Billy Madison for that matter, but Happy Gilmore has such a nostalgic place, you know, is part of it, but these jokes are still funny. They're not funny because I remember what it was like to be 18 and watch this film. Right. They're funny because I watched them 3 nights ago and they're still freaking hilarious.
Yeah. I agree with you. It's, when I watched it again, I a lot of times I will put this in if I'm having a few beers, and what movie am I going to watch? We've all done that. You know, you're getting ready to, you know, kind of settle in. Hey, you got a little buzz going on. What am I going to watch? I'm going to watch a mindless comedy. And it could be either Caddyshack, it could be Talladega Nights, could be something that I know that's going to make me laugh and that's ridiculous. Anchorman is another one, especially Anchorman 2. And this falls into that vein. Austin Powers, it falls into that. It's funny, Kriplius mentions that he likes the subway scene. I was going to bring this up, that it's so odd because when you watch it, now it's so much product placement for Subway in this film. Oh my gosh.
Well, around this time, I think maybe a little before this, but Wayne's World came out and kind of took the piss on the product placement. Yeah. And so from then on, it became, I think, easier, right? Because now we are all in on the joke. Yep. So when you see it, it works so well. And especially the cut, you know, scene from him describing the sandwich in his sitting there in the restaurant to being on a television commercial, and then he hits it off of a tee into a guy's mouth, and it's just like, I shouldn't find that funny at almost 50 years old, but I did. I mean, I laughed at that.
Yeah, it's one of those things like where product placement doesn't work in most films because it's so done. It's supposed to try to be subtle, but yet it's so in your face. This, there's no shame in the product placement. It is pretty obvious who helps support this film at the time. They film in a subway, for crying out loud. But overall, it is a lot of things. Happy Gilmore is a symbol of its time when it came out in the mid-90s. It's a symbol of the careers of that particular cast of SNL. And it's a symbol of that humorous style. We don't see too much like that anymore, except when Adam Sandler puts out a new film. And it's usually a pale imitation. They're usually these days. I did like the first, I think, murder mystery one that he did with Jennifer Aniston. But since then, there's not been a lot of his movies, the newer movies like Hubie Halloween or whatever. Okay, it's not that good. So he's still trying to reach for these things. But man, when he was in his game back in the 90s, he was on his game. There was a lot of movies that came after this that were still pretty funny. And there were some misses, too.
There were some misses. And at the very least at this time, he always had an underlying heart to these movies. Big Daddy had this, you know, this heartwarming story. This one with his grandmother and just, you know, the realization of a dream, even if it wasn't your original dream.
The Wedding Singer was one that was
The Wedding Singer.
Yeah, he's had a great run. He really has.
Being funny along with the everyman, that's what we like about Adam Sandler, is that he's an everyman. We look at him and know that he's not particularly good looking.
Right.
We know that he's not particularly built. But he's what we like to think that we all are, which is easygoing, funny person who can get along and who cares about people, and we all want to think that about ourselves. Yep. I think most of us do anyway. And so there's a little more gravity. Happy Gilmore is a dumb film filled with dumb jokes, but it has the gravity to it because it has heart, because he takes extra care to make movies that do that. And I appreciate that, at least in this time period. I know not everyone is a hit and not everyone of them can be that way.
Jack and Jill is atrocious, but you know, it's like, it's again, you're not going to hit, you're not going to bat 1,000. You're just not. If he's batting 500, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So you throw stuff out there that sucks, but then he comes back with Click or something like that that's really good. You know who he really reminds me of? As I was watching Happy Gilmore, it popped into my head, because a lot of people compare comedians or actors to Jerry Lewis, and a lot of times that comparison doesn't make a lot of sense. Adam Sandler is probably one of the few actors where it does. Jerry Lewis did the funny voices. He had the kind of shtick where he would do the flavin, you know, he was all... I mean, I'm surprised that people haven't made that comparison, because you look at Lewis's early movies. Now, granted, he did a bunch with Dean Martin, but he did some on solo after that, like the Delicate Delinquent and Nutty Professor, where he's basically, you know, I'm not saying Adam Sandler's copied him. I'm just saying they're very similar in comic vein as far as the type of characters they portray. There are everyman that are just beaten down. They make a lot of funny voices, a lot of slapstick. And it, in the end, it tends to work. So I think, Happy Gilmore, to kick off this new category of sports comedies, definitely deserved its place in the top eight, without a doubt. And I think the next movie we're going to talk about deserves its place in the top eight. And they're both about golf, but the two movies are very dissimilar. You're already turning up your nose.
They are very dissimilar.
They are.
I was stunned at how dissimilar these two movies are.
Yeah.
One of them is funny and heartwarming and amazing, and one of them, in a world where Beetlejuice doesn't exist, is the stupidest fucking thing I ever saw in my entire life.
We're about to fight Caddyshack. I'll start off by saying, with you saying that, Caddyshack to me is probably, in my opinion, probably the most perfect sports comedy ever made.
Oh my god. Okay.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Whew.
Yeah, I will tell you. I love Happy Gilmore. I love Happy Gilmore. But I'm going to say this flat out, is that the brilliance of Caddyshack comes from the fact that you had, to me, some of the most impressive comic writers come together and just throw a hour and 35 minute Saturday Night Live skit on screen. It breaks every convention of movie making whatsoever. The movie is glued together by several visionettes, held together by a gopher, which opens up the film. And you can say the gopher's cheesy, you can say what you want about it. Great soundtrack with Kenny Loggins to open the film.
And then, the only thing I liked about this movie was Kenny Loggins.
I've watched this movie so many times, and it never fails to make me laugh. Now, I watched it the first time when I was young in the early 80s, after it originally had come out. So, and it was a phenom then. And there's people that it just doesn't hit for. But man, it is filled with so many clever lines of dialogue, most of which were improvised on set. And it's got probably one of the best casts of that era of comedic titans at the time that came together to do it. Harold Ramis, who, of course, wrote Stripes, who wrote Animal House. This was the follow-up to Animal House. And he wrote Ghostbusters. This fits in there with everything that he's written. It's got the same type of humor, and it just works.
And he himself said that this is one of his more mediocre movies. I think at a certain age, certain movies imprint on you, like, you know, Ducklings and Their Mother.
Yeah.
And maybe as a kid or an adolescent, like, watching this movie probably felt subversive, because I do see that kind of, like you said, not following the rules aspect of the film. Now, what we disagree on, did they pull it off? But I can see it feeling subversive at the time, or maybe we're not used to seeing Saturday Night Live actors on the big screen. So, and now we've got a couple of them in the same movie, but like, I was absent that day from watching this as a kid. I watched it for the first time four days ago. I mean, Greg, I didn't laugh a single time this movie. That's and I don't think that I even could muster up so much of as a grin maybe I could count on one hand the number of times where I went,
that's crazy. I mean,
Bill Murray versus the gopher subplot that you think holds this together, I find not only completely unwatchable, but it feels like a sketch that was forced into the movie at the last minute, given how he doesn't talk hardly at all to any other character in this movie. So it's not like it's holds it together. It's its own separate thing. If it held it together, he'd communicate with some other human being in a meaningful way in this movie, but he doesn't.
No, and that's the point. The point is that the war that Bill Murray's character, Carl the groundskeeper, is going on with the gopher, it is the background to everything that's happening in the film. So while this is going on, everything that's going on, of course, the main character is Danny Noonan, who is trying to get a golf, you know, scholarship or get an awarded a scholarship to go to college. To do so, he has to kiss a lot of ass, working at a caddy at a very upscale. It was based on Brian Doyle Murray, who was in the film, and Bill Murray's own life as caddies. So the original script was meant to be more about the caddies, and it was going to be kind of a drama comedy, almost in the vein of Animal House. But then as Bill Murray came in, he had 6 days to shoot his scenes. So he was supposed to just do a couple of cameos. Originally, his character wasn't even supposed to speak. And then Bill Murray starts to improvise, and he comes up with these. So to me, with these vignettes, and that's the thing that what I love about it is that there's so many, when you watch a movie, there's so many movies that have to follow the rules that, oh, we've got to have act one, scene one, then you do this, and then you do this. And every scene has to be, you know, go toward advancing the plot. There are so many scenes in this movie that have nothing to do with the plot. The scene where Bill Murray is talking to the caddy and he's got the pitchfork in his neck, nothing to do with the plot, but it's a hilarious scene. In fact, I'm going to play the scene right now. One of my favorite moments.
Pro Jack. And who do you think they give me? The Dalai Lama himself. The 12th son of the Lama. The flowing robes, the grace, bald. Striking. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter, the Lama. Long. Into a 10,000-foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. Do you know what the Lama says?
No.
Gunga Galunga. Gunga Gunga Galunga. So we finish 18, and he's going to stiff me. And I say, hey, Lama, hey, how about a little something, you know, for the effort, you know? And he says, oh, there won't be any money. But when you die, on your deathbed, you will receive total consciousness. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
So to me, that is outrageously funny. The fact that he thought that up on the spot, and the guy who was filming it, he's deliberately pushing that pitchfork as close to his neck as possible. The guy thought, man, if I move one wrong way, that thing's going to go into my neck. So it adds a bit of tension to the thing where he's got the guy up against the wall. And I, you know, watching that back just now and hearing us, you know, you talking about Happy Gilmore earlier, I do think maybe there is a generational thing with the sense of humor for the 90s, because it's totally different from the sense of humor of the 90s to the sense of humor of the 70s. This has a sense of humor of the original Saturday Night Live cast, which is very offbeat. It can be very dark. It can be very improvisational. And it's also very one-liner-ish, where you get these little quips that go on. And if you're not paying attention to the little quips, there's a scene where Chevy Chase dumps oil all over the girl's back, and she goes, you're crazy. He said they said the same thing about the Son of Sam. And it's just a little one-liner that is...
And listen, I mean, first of all, I recognize that between this and Beetlejuice, you know, I dig a hole for myself with the, you know, movie-going masses. I get that. So, but look, I have a soft spot for Bill Murray. I like Bill Murray. Maybe it's come out that he's a little more of a creep than we thought in real life, but yeah. I like Bill Murray movies. And Chevy Chase, as a human being, is a walking bag of shit.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But Fletch is one of my favorite 80s movies. I mean, I love that thing that he does so well, which is be that.
Yeah, and he does, it here. Thing. He does it here.
But he's only in this movie for 5 minutes.
He's in it enough. He has the opening scene where
it's not so like I can't appreciate movies of this time.
Yeah.
Or with this cast.
Yeah.
Or with this writer.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters, Stripes, Groundhog Day. I like those movies.
Yeah.
This, like, it's number 71 on it. We want to talk about the AFI, the top 100 funniest movies of all time.
I agree. I do. I
watched, how can that be possible if I didn't laugh one single time?
It can. Well, that's just you. Cause like I said, there's people that, like among my friends, this is quoted all the time. The whole thing, which is, you know, so I got that going for me, which is nice. I'm wearing a Bushwood t-shirt, by the way, Bushwood Country Club. It is one of those things. The pool scene, which somebody brought up in the comments, is brilliant. So let's talk about the pool scene. You can like it or not like it. It is brilliant. To those of us that appreciate that,
brilliant.
Scene. It is brilliant, and I'll say for
brilliant.
I'll say for a couple of reasons. First of all, the sign, Caddy Day. Caddy,
they get
welcome.
15 minutes. I got a slight one to one fifteen. I got a slight thing for that.
Water ballet scene. The Lacey Underall, which is a great name by the way. She shows up, and everybody sucks in their chest. It is. There's so many moments of it. You got the Kenny Loggins soundtrack. They dumped the
floating turd in the pool.
It wasn't a turd. It was a baby Ruth. Now, it was based on a true
brilliant.
Story. It was based on a real story where there was a floating turd, and this they used a baby Ruth. It's brilliant for a lot of reasons. It is. It's one of those things. First of all, it's not been done. The thing that it's in there, the idea of it is outrageous. If it was in Happy Gilmore, you'd laugh. If it Adam Sandler would have done it, you'd laugh. It's that kind of ridiculousness. Then in the end, when Bill Murray actually is cleaning the pool and picks it up, sniffs it, and takes a bite in front of the Ted Knight's wife, it's hilarious. It's a scream. Absolutely adore the whole movie. But there's, like I said, it's separate vignettes that are strung together, revolving around this guy trying to get a caddy scholarship. It wasn't originally intended to be, it was intended to be more about the caddies, but the people that were in it started to outshine everyone else. And so they were given a central focus. And it's like watching a bunch of separate skits done that are all tied together in chronological order that makes sense. And I don't even want to get started with Rodney Dangerfield.
He's one of the most unfunny human beings to ever exist, at least in this film. The only person you could have put in here that would have been more annoying and more stupid and more unfunny is Amy Schumer, but she probably wasn't alive at this time.
Oh, my gosh. His,
it doesn't fit with this at all. I know what we're trying to do. We're trying to do the same thing we did in a bunch of 80s movies and the same thing we did in Happy Gilmore, which is have the, you know, subversive, you know, kind of working class, doesn't follow the rules schlub versus the establishment stuffy judge member of this country club. I get it, but this was the worst thing I've ever seen put on film. I'd rather watch hardcore European gay pornography for 100 years than to watch 5 minutes of Rodney Dangerfield do whatever this was in this thing.
And see, so the thing is, again, it's all a matter of taste. I grew up with Rodney Dangerfield, just watching some of his stuff, his specials, the Young Comedian specials. I thought his stand-up was very self-deprecating and very enjoyable. I like Rodney. And I think in this, he steals his moments. He's absolutely hilarious in my eyes. He just, the scene, and I'm going to play it real quick, in the pro shop where he first comes in, is the one-liners he gets in just a couple of minutes of this scene is one of my favorite moments of the thing. So let's take a look.
I think this place is restricted, Wang, so don't tell me you're Jewish. Okay, fine.
Hey, kid, I'm Al Chervik. I'm playing with Drew Scott today. This is my guest, Mr. Wang. No offense. Oh, I can hear me have a half a dozen of those Vulcan D10s and set my friend up here with the whole schmear. You know, clubs, bags, shoes, glove, shirt, pants. Hey, orange balls. I'll have a box of those. Give me a box of those naked lady tees and give me two of those. Give me six of those. Oh, this is the worst looking hat I ever saw. Well, you buy a hat like this, I'll bet you get a free bowl of soup, huh? Oh, it looks good on you, though.
Come on. That's funny. It just really is. It just is.
The hat gag of what we just saw is the only one that came close to landing.
I hear this place is restricted, so don't tell him you're Jewish. I mean, seriously, that is a great line.
It maybe that is delivered by someone so unqualified to even be called a comedian. And look, I didn't watch, said I know the I get no respect, you know, whatever, you know, this thing was, but I've never sit down and watched Rodney Dangerfield. Hindsight being 2020, now that I've seen this movie, I'm glad that I've never done that. But Jesus, insufferable. I mean, Christ almighty.
Well, so we've established,
I feel like I'm a crazy person. The myth of Caddyshack far exceeds what I actually saw on film. It surprises me that after rewatching it,
I've watched it. I guess I can kind of see. I never get tired of it. I could watch it right now and not be bored. I've watched it a million times and not been bored. It's just the way it is. There's so many little one-liners like this one right here where the guy goes, what's the sign say? The guy says, no bare feet. And then he has to pull him up to read where it says no fighting. That stuff, like I said, if it was in an Adam Sandler movie and he was going, you'd be like, oh, that's hilarious. But it's like with this, when you've got really expert comedians, it's not as funny. But there's just some great people in here doing really good things with what they know best. And it was kind of the birth of improvisation in movies, which wasn't being done. So when they filmed this movie, they had a script, and then they kind of just said, let's just film these individual scenes, let's make it funny, and whatever's funny they stuck. And that's something that they were doing up till recently in the Will Ferrell films, Paul Rudd films, and that kind of thing, where they and Steve Carell, 40-Year-Old Virgin, Judd Apatow, where they do these multiple takes where they throw the script out the window and let them just say whatever they think is funny. And it works. And I think it works. Like Anchorman 2, they have two whole entire films that are different in dialogue because they just changed the dialogue from the first one to the second one. And I like stuff like that. So, and the same thing with this. I like improvisation. I like things that aren't conventional. I like Bill Murray.
I mean, maybe that's the thing, because I know people like this Whose Line Is It Anyway show, and I find that thing to be fucking insufferable and cringy as hell and stupid, and most of the time
I feel like
the audience is being paid to laugh at shit that's not funny.
And then that could be the thing, is that you don't find improvisation funny. And like I said, this scene here with Bill Murray doing the Cinderella story, again, all improvisation. But
you don't know that as a moviegoer who is watching a movie. You don't know whether this was scripted or improvised. So it was improvised doesn't make it any more or less funny.
Right.
What you see on the screen is what you get.
That's a good point. But the thing is that in this instant, it makes sense to me as far as watching this guy declare himself the Masters champion. And he's commentating on his own, you know, hitting the chrysanthemums with the freaking hoe as he's pretending. That's something that everybody does, where they shoot the last shot and go, Kobe, or they go, it's 5 seconds on the clock, we're doing this. He's just doing that. And that's what makes it endearing and funny. And then the fact that probably one of the best, again, another vignette where the bishop, you know, takes him out to do nine holes. There's so many golfers that have played in the rain or have dealt with bad weather, and they always reference the bishop going out and having the, well, God wouldn't deny me the best game of my life. And then he misses the putt on nine or whatever and ends up getting struck by lightning. It's just great stuff.
Well, I don't have to know anything about golf to appreciate this movie anymore, just like I don't have to know anything about hunting paranormal activities to find Ghostbusters, you know, to appreciate Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah.
It just isn't funny. It's not heartwarming and funny. It doesn't tell a serious story but uses comedy to tell it. It's not, to me, it wasn't funny and zany. It was unfunny. And it's just, I think if people would just watch the movie with an open heart and open minds, they would realize that it is not as good as they remember.
Yeah. And
that's what I think.
That doesn't work for me, because I've watched it since I've been around. Since the first time I've watched it, I've wanted to watch it again. There's a reason why so many people watch it and quote it. And it's okay that you don't like it.
I hate to interrupt, but like, is it because you remember watching it with your friends and your family and you have fond memories of saying that stuff with your friends and your prior experiences with it? Or is it because the movie works in that moment of the story?
Kriplius is saying too much nostalgia goggles. I would argue that that's why you like Happy Gilmore so much, is because it was when you were in high school that you watched it. If you saw that today and you had jokes like
there are many films that I know I hold in high regard.
Hold on. If you had jokes like
nostalgia,
like, if there was a joke where Bill Murray rode around on a broom going, woo-hoo, you would not think that was funny. I didn't laugh at that in
Happy Gilmore.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So there are plenty of
films that I know have a nostalgia factor for me that are objectively not good movies. Dude Where's My Car is a movie I love because of the time it came out and the friends I watched it with and the jokes that I tell with them. That movie's a piece of shit, but at least I can admit it.
Well, this one I won't admit is a piece of shit because I don't.
I'm not saying you have to admit it. I just think
I would never do that with this film. I hold on
to nostalgia so close because it means so much. Because nostalgia is not a bad thing.
Here is the thing.
Nostalgia, when you look back on things and it's peaceful to you, it's comforting, it's of a certain time where you were happier, or a certain time where the whole world was yours, or of a certain time where just anything that you look back on fondly, that's nostalgia, and that's okay, but it doesn't mean that everything associated with that time or that place was good.
So I understand what you're saying, but I disagree with you as to why people find it funny. Because this movie, when it came out, didn't do well. It was slammed by the critics for the same reasons that you're slamming it right now.
Because it's not funny?
Well, that's what they said, it was unfunny. But the critics said that, and I give what the critics say about friggin' two shits up my ass. I don't give a shit of what the critics say. But the thing is that over time, this movie has become very endearing by the people who've watched it and loved it and enjoyed it for what it was. Just separate moments of great comedy strung together over a course of an hour and a half, done by people that are extremely funny, and the movie comes out is funny. You don't have to think it is. I'm not the only one who thinks it's hilarious.
Ramis didn't think it was.
Well, Harold Ramis was his own worst critic, and he had a problem with it because they changed a lot of Doug Kenny's original script, who was the co-writer, and so he had a more of emotional attachment to it. But there were other people that are involved with it. You can watch other documentaries on it, people that were involved in it that consider it a timeless classic as far as a comedy classic. And it just is. Whether you like it or not doesn't change the fact that it is highly regarded. And so this is a film that was slammed by critics when it came out and now is considered one of the top 70 comedies of all time by AFI. And there's a reason for that. It just, it is. It is, and you don't have to like it.
No, I know that it is a classic, and like I don't have any reason to not like this or not laugh. I don't need to have some plot constructed, you know, where every scene pushes towards a resolution to that. I'm okay with movies that take a very laissez-faire approach to how they're put together. I don't give a shit about that. I'm a schlub, you know. I don't know anything about movies. So that is not important to me. The only thing important to me is for this film, at least when we're talking about the eight best sports comedies of all time, is just be funny. And I just didn't find it funny. And I didn't go into it not wanting to find it funny. Like I said, I like Harold Ramis as a writer. I like Chevy Chase and Bill Murray as actors. Rodney Dangerfield, I didn't know anything about prior to this except for I get no respect pulling on his collar. Like, that's it. So, you know, this isn't some character I'm trying to play or I'm some sort of hard ass who, you know, can only appreciate well-crafted movies that are funny. Yeah. Because Happy Gilmore's not some prime shining example of well-crafted movies that are great. I don't think it's a great movie, but at least it was fucking funny.
And see, that's where I like Happy Gilmore for what it is, and I could appreciate that it's funny, but I think there are a lot of detractors from Happy Gilmore that Caddyshack beats it in a million ways. And that's because of the actual type of humor that's used in Caddyshack. And that's where I think the difference is. Now, you could say it's nostalgia or whatever. I think it's a different sensibility of time. If you put Steve Martin, one of his records on right now from the 70s, or his stand-up bits, a lot of people would watch it and go, that is one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. It has nothing to do with nostalgia. It has to do with the sense of humor that you currently have as an adult and what you find funny and what you don't find funny, based on your upbringing and what you've seen that's made you laugh over the course of your life. It's not looking back fondly on it. I've listened to Steve Martin's material and go, oh, I can see why some people find that divisive, because it is silly. It is crazy. It is ridiculous at times. And that's the same thing with Caddyshack. It's one of those things that when this came out, it was the sense of humor at the time. It was a counterculture movement that was started with Saturday Night Live that seeped its way into this through several movies that this cast made. So very similar in vein to Happy Gilmore, where you had the 90s cast of Saturday Night Live making movies. You had the 70s cast, but the sense of humor is totally different. You take the movies of Chevy Chase, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Gilda Radner, all that, and you compare them to the 90s cast.
That's the thing, is that I can find those people funny. I find Steve Martin in The Jerk funny. I find a lot of 80s movies funny. It's not like I have this blind spot for an entire decade or movement of comedy or period in time where it was just different, you know, like I might have for, I mean, I thought Singing in the Rain had funny parts, and that was from the 40s whatever. You know, like, it's not that. It's that this movie's not funny. It's not that that time or place wasn't funny. It's not,
so
like,
if it's not funny,
that humor is so far beyond my concept of what can and can't be funny,
right?
You know, that it's just above me, or I can't, or it's below me, either one. Right. It's neither of those. It's just not funny to me.
Right.
It's not that I can't understand it or,
right.
you know, that
I know. And that, I didn't say that.
No, I know. But that, you know, that these people were doing a type of comedy that I don't find funny. That's not true because these people individually have all done things that I find funny.
Do you
just not this film?
Have you ever watched the old episodes of Saturday Night Live and found those funny?
Some, not all.
Exactly.
Just so, like today, I watch it and I find some of it funny and some of it's right. not.
So it was, and I'm not saying that you don't understand it. I'm saying the sense of humor was different. So you're saying it's not funny, but the key word there is not funny to you.
Sure.
It's extremely funny to a lot of people. And part of the reason why I'm trying to explain it is because of the dialogue. It is because it's definitely not slapstick except for the gopher. The one scene that Bill Murray has with Chevy Chase, where they're, you know, just conversing and they smoke the giant joint and then, you know, do the cannonball. It was all, again, filmed in one day, totally improvised. And it was one of those things that it's when people watch it, it's funny. It's enjoyable. And the things that he says, when he tells him, hey, you come over anytime. Oh, yeah, yeah, where's your address yet? Yeah, 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 Park Place or whatever he says. And he goes, oh, well, you got a pool over there? Oh, we got a pool. We got a pool or a pond. Pond would be good for you, though. I mean, those are the kind of things that when those lines are delivered by Chevy Chase, it comes off as dry wit that doesn't work for everybody. It doesn't. And I would agree with that. I've known people that don't like Caddyshack. Not many. But I've known people who don't.
Bunch of assholes.
But not many, but I've known a few.
I've known a bunch of dumb fucks who didn't like this movie. No,
there's a reason it's number four on our list.
I think maybe I'm having a hard time with this because of all the things I said. Because individually, I find these people funny. Individually, I find this writer very funny in a lot of things.
Yeah.
That I enjoy sports. I think I'm a fairly funny person. And so I think I get I have a grasp on, you know, not like I have more of a grasp, but I just don't think it's possible that I just don't get it. I don't think that's the explanation. I don't know what it is.
I didn't say you don't get it. I just said, it's not funny to you.
Yeah. I mean, and that's,
And that's okay.
It's not just that it wasn't for me. I've sat through plenty of movies that I didn't like, you know, and maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm just, maybe there's a part of me that just was so unentertained by this that, you know, I wanted to make it a bigger deal than it was. But I mean, I really was not having fun watching this. You know, what I'm expressing now may be a little put on because of the format that we're using to do this, but not by much.
And that's fine. That's kind of what this show is all about. So for all of you that are watching on YouTube,
think that Greg and I are friends. We are.
I think this is like the first like real argument that we've had. We kind of disagreed on things, but I think this is the first like real battle where we've kind of just thrown the gauntlet down. Because I'm willing to die on the hill that is Caddyshack. I hope
you do.
Thank you. But it is. I mean, I like Happy Gilmore as well. But if you were going to sit me down and say, and I'm sure the opposite is for you, you have to watch one. I'm going to watch Caddyshack over and over again because I just find it extremely comforting and funny, and just I love everybody in it. I love the attitudes of the characters. I do wish the caddies had been featured more, like the original script. I understand why they weren't. I think it was originally supposed to be Animal House, but with caddies, and the big names stole the show. But what they came up with, do you know that the original rough cut of this was 4.5 hours?
Oh my God, I'd fucking kill myself.
Well, I'm just saying, and a lot of that was the drama parts that were about Maggie and Danny and their relationship, and then all the other ones. There's the one caddy called Motormouth. You don't even know his name because he gets overlooked. And the reason was when they took it back to edit it, it was like this stuff, and again, I know you don't find it funny, but these items with Chevy Chase and Rodney Dangerfield and Bill Murray were so much more funnier than what they had with the caddies, that they had to recut it to put as little bit of the caddy information as they could and then make it focused on the big names that were in it.
Was going to be harder to figure out, like, is this a good movie? Because we're dealing with comedies and they're about sports, as opposed to, well, we had it pretty easy figuring out what was a good movie with the AFI top eight, you know. I mean, there
just
were
agreed on one.
We just know, right? So the standards are probably different when you're trying to figure out, is Happy Gilmore a good movie? Then when you're trying to figure out, is Casablanca a good movie?
Right.
The standards are just going to be different, but I don't want to overthink it. We're dealing with comedies. And so rule number one is it should be funny. I only found one of these movies funny.
And that's fine.
But even more than that, even if I found them both funny or I found them both unfunny, Happy Gilmore has a better villain and has more heart and has more of a Shooter McGavin versus Judge
Smales.
So-and-so.
Judge Smales is a better villain in my eyes.
Shooter McGavin is villain.
When he throws his club and he hits the woman, and just there's so many moments with him yelling at his Spalding. It's just there's so many great moments with Ted Knight. It's I love Shooter McGavin. Don't get me wrong, but I would take Ted Knight at Judge Smales over him 100 times. But that's just. That's my taste. That's my opinion. So I think we can, on this one, it looks like I'm going to vote Caddyshack for sure. And you're going to vote Happy Gilmore. So we will, for the audience that's out there, that if you go to the Jarrett Goes to the Movies Facebook page and you go to the Box Office Battles Facebook page, there will be polls on there to vote over the next week before our next episode. We'll leave it open through the weekend. This is a holiday weekend, so Labor Day coming up. We'll leave that open, and then we will declare a winner. Because I know you're not going to vote Caddyshack, so I'm pretty sure it's 1-1. And we will let the audience decide this.
I'm about to start 400 new Facebook accounts just so I can log in.
See, no rigging the vote.
Vote this thing.
No rigging the vote. So,
hey, do you have the Star Spangled Banner on your soundboard there? For those of you listening who will say that I am wrong, I ask but one thing of you, is to watch this film again and objectively tell me that it is a funny movie. You don't have to. You just watched it. But yeah, those of you who just want to get on there and you just want to go click because you think Caddyshack is the better or funnier, whatever your preferred methodology is, please.
Yeah.
Be an informed voter. Go back. Watch this. Okay. Watch this piece of shit.
So I will stand by the audience vote. And I've said that since the beginning. When Citizen Kane did not win and Schindler's List went through, I stood by it. That's fine. And I do think that the audience will vote Happy Gilmore. Because again, it's a different time. We're talking 50 years.
I don't know, man. I get the feeling that it's years. Like this Beetlejuice thing. Everybody has told me how stupid I am.
We're going to find out. Cripley has put in there. I hear they're doing a Happy Gilmore 2. Yes, they are. They've got the script already written. It's already been delivered. The original players are coming back. So yeah, that's a definite. I worry about those things. A sequel 30 years after the original is really tough for me because sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. Have like the new Ghostbusters that they just did.
Oh.
I did not care for it. However, I did like the new Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F, that came out. Wasn't great. Everybody was a lot older. They stuck to the original formula, like we talked about earlier, and it was enjoyable. Was it the best comedy ever? No, but it was a good passing of an hour and 40 minutes. And Eddie Murphy was Eddie Murphy. And it brought back some of the laughs from the original. So I hope that it's more like Axel F and less like Frozen Empire. That's what I'm hoping for with the new Happy Gilmore. So we'll see. So I can honestly say that we are at a draw on this one. We will need the audience's help. We're not going to be back next week. We have the holiday coming up, and frankly, we just need to get a break, get some more stuff out on social media. So
did I make you mad?
No, why would you make me
mad? Are we canceling the show?
No,
oh, no.
We all were doing. We're
taking a break, and then all of a sudden,
We're not on a break, and this isn't Friends.
Okay, all right.
I'm not going to find another person to host with me. It's all good. But no, I think that we're gonna slow the show down a little bit. School's starting back up again. We're going to make people wait. So we're probably going to be on every other Tuesday from here on out, especially football season starting as well. I've got a football podcast that I do on Thursdays. I'm so busy, dude.
You busy boy.
I'm so busy. But this is going to be our next show, and this one is going to be a lot of fun. Again, I don't think you'll like Slapshot if you didn't like Caddyshack. I honestly don't. It's again early 70s. There are some funny moments. But however, I will say this about Slapshot. It is a comedy drama, and the plot is strung together a lot better. It's more coherent. It's more of a linear plot, though the drama parts sometimes tend to lag a little bit, in my opinion. But I'll leave that up to you. I don't want to influence you. I love Slapshot.
And on the other hand, in Dodgeball, someone gets hit by a wrench.
They do. I do.
So, listen, it's going to be tough.
We stay together.
I don't like it when mommy and daddy argue.
Yeah, Mike Florida. I love both. Tough call for me. Please stay together, family. LOL. Sometimes I forget to read out what people are commenting for the podcast audience, because not everybody actually watches the live stream. Sometimes they just listen to it on the podcast, which is great. We're glad for all of you people that are listening to us, whether it's through you just watching on YouTube Live or Twitch. We're extremely happy that you're doing that. I think I was calculating our streams on YouTube. We're in the hundreds for like every episode's averaged around 50, 60 views, which is nice. We can do better. So tell your friends about Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. If you really like us, you will subscribe, whether it's on Twitch or YouTube Live. And also you can email us for any questions, or if you want to vote for either Caddyshack or the other one, you can email us at boxofficebattles@gmail.com. You just now catch that. Our Twitch is Box Office Battle Pod. You'll find us there. And of course, our YouTube is at Box Office Battle Podcast. We are on Facebook. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can find us on Amazon Music. You can find us on iHeartRadio, Pandora. But please give us a subscribe wherever you're at so that you can always catch the new episodes and be with us whenever we live stream as well, because we like having people in the audience making comments and asking questions. So like I said, our next episode will be on the 10th of September. That's the live stream on YouTube Live. It's going to be Slapshot versus Dodgeball on Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. So Eric, that being said, do you have any parting words against
Kiss? I still love you. And... no, I appreciate all of you guys, and until next week, or until next time, be excellent to each other.
Thanks so much for joining, guys, and we'll see you on September 10th. Thanks so much.